FMA
IMMU
Main Menu
Main Menu
Main Menu
Main Menu Main Menu
A very warm welcome to ACB Radio's regular look at technology from a blindness perspective. This is Main Menu.
This week on Main Menu, we bring you 2 hours all about the iPod Shuffle and Apple's iTunes.
iTunes is very visually appealing and easy to use for a sighted person. And that pleasure in its use should be translated into an audio context for blind people. And Jaws was the only product which gave me the tools to create the access I wanted.
We hear from Brian Hargen on his new script files for Jaws for Windows for iTunes version 4.9. And then...
You know, it's always interesting, you know, you hear about iPods and... On top of everything else, of course, living out in Hawaii, as I do, not even in Honolulu, but on the Big Island, there's a lot going on. You don't get to see a lot of things. And so I hadn't even seen an iPod, but my boss got one for her teenage son. Anyway, she got one for her son for Christmas and fell in love with it, said this is the greatest thing since sliced bread. We need to do a book on it. I said, oh, that's great, but it doesn't have a screen.
We interview Woody Anna Dresner on her new book about the iPod Shuffle. Is it accessible? Stay tuned to find out. And finally on Main Menu...
In the past, if you couldn't get online through broadband or through a hotspot or using a dial-up modem, you were stuck. You had to wait and hope that you had some work to do on your PacMate itself. That you had copied plenty of books to your compact flash file or documents to edit or so on and so forth, you couldn't get any new information or publish any new information until you were again connected with an internet service. Now, as long as you are in an area covered by your cellular provider's data service, you are all set.
We hear part one of a review done by Daryl Shandro on connecting the PacMate with the Nokia 3650 phone using Bluetooth. That's coming up all this week on this, a 2-hour extended edition of ACB Radio's Main Menu.
Hi, I'm Brian Hartren from T&T Consultancy Limited in the United Kingdom. And I'd like to talk to you today about an interface we've developed for users of Jaws for Windows to the iTunes software from Apple. iTunes, if you don't know, allows you to directly interface with any one of the iPod series of products also manufactured by Apple, and this includes the very popular iPod Shuffle. But it also enables you to do much more than that. In fact, iTunes is a very sophisticated music management system, allowing you to play and organize your music collection, whether it already exists on a computer, or which you would like to convert into audio files from a CD collection. iTunes is considered by many visually impaired people to be difficult to access. If you use the application with a screen reader without any special modification, you have limited access to the menu system, and much of the very visual on-screen information cannot be accessed by using the arrow keys or the tab key, the ways one would usually interact with and manipulate a Windows-based application. I hope you'll think that what I'm going to demonstrate to you today is a very accessible and intuitive interface, using Jaws for Windows as the primary access tool to the application. But how did I get into creating the accessible iTunes interface in the first place? Well, approximately 6 weeks ago at the time of recording, I purchased an iPod Shuffle and installed the accompanying iTunes software, which comes on a CD-ROM with a product. Incidentally, the application itself is also freely downloadable from Apple's own website. At the time, I was using JAWS for Windows version 6.1, and for various reasons which are now apparent to me, the JAWS cursor could not be used to access the screen contents, which I got very disillusioned about, and so purchased an iRiver H340 player. This is a hard disk-based unit, requiring no computer transfer software. However, I still had a very definite need for an iPod Shuffle, since the iRiver did not play books from Audible.com. At the time, on the Audible mailing list, Anna Dresner advertised her recently published book, The iPod Experience, published by the National Braille Press in the US, and you can find out more information about that by going to www.nbp.org. Now, when I got this book and read it, I was immediately inspired to begin writing the scripts for JAWS. Anna detailed not only the difficulties she had in understanding and overcoming how iTunes functions, but she also explained the visual layout and complexities of the screen, which was most helpful, and I would certainly encourage anybody to read the book. Since that time, Anna has not only provided me with a great deal of encouragement in the development of the scripts, but she's also thoroughly tested them for me at various stages. She's suggested new features as we both discovered more about what the application is capable of doing, and she's made valuable recommendations regarding the documentation, of which more later. Let's talk about why you would want to use iTunes at the current time. Well, apart from the fact that I genuinely think that, assuming our interface is installed, this is now a high-quality application to use, you can use it with or without an iPod to play music, podcasts, or audiobooks. The music can be easily played in a random order, or you can create playlists of favourite songs. In respect of playback of books from Audible, I now prefer using iTunes as opposed to Audible Manager. iTunes, in addition, contains an autofill facility, which is a more automated method of transferring files to an iPod rather than doing this manually. Autofill can also be set through our interface to randomly select songs from your library or playlists and transfer them to your iPod. This is really nice if you have a large music library, because when you're listening to the selection on your iPod, you would never know what was coming next. Now a few words about why I chose JAWS as the access tool, which is important within the context of the demonstration. While other screen reading products could be customized to provide, in my view, what would be a basic level of functionality to iTunes, and I believe in recent days work has begun in that area, as I said earlier, this is not just about providing access to an application. iTunes is very visually appealing and easy to use for a sighted person, and that pleasure in its use should be translated into an audio context for blind people, and JAWS was the only product which gave me the tools to create the access I wanted. The accessible iTunes interface requires preferably iTunes version 4.9, which can be downloaded from www.apple.com/iTunes, and either JAWS for Windows 5.0, 6.0 or 6.2. We've created three builds of the product, which can also be downloaded from our website. Once you download the file to your computer, you simply launch it, you press the Enter key three times to complete the installation process, as automatically directed by JAWS, and the files are copied to your computer and are immediately ready for use. What we didn't want to do was to just put one zipped archive of the files on the website and suggest that you download them into a very long and complicated JAWS settings directory. The much better route is to create self-executing files, which we've done, because don't forget that this application should be easy to use from the very start. When you install the scripts, a demonstration authorization file also gets installed. This will allow you to evaluate the scripts for 10-minute periods, after which time you should restart your computer to get a further evaluation time. Should you purchase the interface, which I'll talk about at the end of this item, you'll be sent a similar installer, which will correctly authorize the product for you. Once the installer has copied files to your computer, you immediately see the user's manual, which is brought into Internet Explorer and is a correctly formatted document with headings. Now, I'm not exaggerating when I say it's a manual, which we hope has been carefully thought out and contains approximately 50 sections, which demonstrates the large number of features in the scripts. You can also view this manual for yourself on our website even before you take the scripts for a spin if you want to. You can read the manual by pressing Insert F1 at any time from within iTunes, and a keystroke summary is included by pressing Insert H. So what I'm saying is, all the protocol which one would normally expect from JAWS scripting has been applied here. Okay, so let's dive straight in. I've got an icon for iTunes on my desktop.
iTunes 7 of 27.
And there it is. I'll press Enter to launch the application.
Insert H equals hotkey help. Insert F1 equals read user manual. iTunes library.
Okay, so JAWS is telling us we're now in the library, and that is the hub of the application, so to speak. It's where all your music files are stored. You can create playlists off of that, and we'll talk about playlists later, but the library is the main application, and you're always going to want to get back to that point, and there's a very good way of doing that, which I'll explain in a moment. When you launch iTunes with the scripts installed for the first time, there is a little bit of customizing to be done, both from the JAWS end and also from the iTunes application. Now, all this is very carefully explained in the manual, and we have tried once again to make this as easy to do as possible. We can only get the high-quality access through JAWS to iTunes, thanks to the ability of JAWS to be able to track the status of different colours on the screen. Now, the problem with that is that if you create scripts with colour tracking employed on one machine, and then you transfer them to another, the chances are that they may not work successfully, particularly if people are using different colour depths and so on. What we've done is to include a little training tool, which you may need to use. All you do is you press Alt-Control-Shift-Z on the computer keyboard, and JAWS will go off and it will look on the screen for the information that it needs. It will then record the colour assignments and preserve those for future use so that you won't have to do that again. Ideally, you should also make some adjustments to iTunes, because each screen with which you interact within the iTunes application is controlled by a completely separate and independent view. So, in other words, you can have a number of columns displayed in one view, you don't have to have as many displayed in another, and so on. Well, in the manual, we recommend a certain standard which all views should adhere to in order that JAWS can read the maximum amount of information. And as I say, that is carefully explained in the documentation. Now that we're set up, it's time to explore the application itself, you'll be glad to know. We've introduced a key on the keyboard, which we call the iTunes modifier key. On a desktop keyboard, that is the Alt key, the Windows key, and the Control key. So all the three keys to the immediate left of the spacebar are held down, and that is the iTunes modifier key. On a laptop computer, because that's important as well, it's the Control key and the Caps Lock key. In fact, to be precise, it's the JAWS key, but with the laptop layout selected, that is usually assigned to the Caps Lock key. And the idea of this key is that you use it in conjunction with other letter keys on the computer keyboard to perform various functions within the iTunes application with the scripts running. All the keystrokes are pretty easy to remember, and where possible we've used mnemonics so that there's a bit of alliteration in terms of remembering the keystroke and the function. Let me explain now the layout of the iTunes screen, because it's very important that you get this into your mind so that you know how you're going to interact with it. It's divided into three sections. If you can imagine, on the left-hand side, you have what we call the source list. And this is a list of categories that you can interact with. For example, the topmost category is the library. Below that is podcasts. Below that, for example, you have something called Party Shuffle, which we're going to talk about. You have the iTunes Music Store and various other categories. The source list will also display any playlists which you may have created. And finally, most importantly, assuming you have an iPod, it contains your iPod as well. So you'll see in this category list your iPod's name. If you press a tab key, you will reach an edit box. And this is a search tool. You can actually type in a track that you're looking for. If you have hundreds or thousands of tracks in your iTunes music library, you can press enter and then you'll be able to see that information. It's a bit like a Google search, if you like. You type in what it is you want, press enter, and you get a results page. That's exactly what you get with iTunes, should you care to use that feature. If you press a tab key again, you get to a third window. And this window is very interactive. It shows the contents of what you have selected in the first window. So, for example, if you'd selected the library from the category or source list, and then you press tab twice to get to this third area, you'll actually see the contents of your library being displayed in this window. I call it the track list. Pressing the tab key once more will take you back to the library. And of course you can use shift tab to traverse back through these three areas should you want to do that. One thing you'll always want to do, as I've already pointed out, is to go directly to the library. And we have a keystroke to do this, which is the iTunes modifier key with I. If you press this, it will automatically go to the library. And you'll then be able to tab twice to find out which items you have in your library. This keystroke is not only a good way of getting straight to the library, but it's also a very good orientation point, because if you get lost within the application, which is quite possible, you can then just press iTunes modifier I, and you'll go back to the library, and then you can start exploring from known territory with the arrow keys or the tab key. The first thing I had to do when creating these scripts, and the first job I usually always do when I go out to companies and organizations and create scripts for them, is to make the menu bar accessible, because without the menu bar, you're at a bit of a loss, really, aren't you? It is fair to say that without the scripts installed, you can press the Alt key together with the initial letter of one of the menu items to deploy that menu. So if you press Alt A, it will actually bring up the advanced menu and you can arrow down. However, if you don't know what they are in the first place, you're going to have a problem. So pressing the Alt key at this point,
File,
will immediately bring up the menu, and the first item is File. You can then arrow right,
Edit, Controls, Visualizer, Advanced,
and there's our advanced menu. I can press down arrow now,
Context menu, switch to mini player to open stream control, subscribe to podcast.
Okay, we'll get to that later. I'll press Escape to come out of the menu.
Leaving menus.
So the first thing we need to do then is to import some tracks into our iTunes library, because it's completely empty at the moment. There are, of course, two ways at the moment of doing that. The first is, if you already have an MP3 collection on your computer, you can import those files directly into iTunes. The second would be to use your existing CD collection to import tracks into the music library as well. Both of which are very easy to do. Let's start with importing audio files that I've already got on this computer in MP3 format, and I've actually put a small selection of my music collection in a folder called Demo for this demonstration. There are two ways of importing tracks into iTunes in this respect. The first is by way of the conventional method provided as part of the iTunes application, and that's by pressing Control O.
Add to library dialog, file name, edit combo.
And this brings up a standard Windows open dialog box, so you can browse to the relevant folder if you want to. I'm actually going to type in here C:\demo, because that is the directory name. I'll press enter.
C demo.
And then shift and tab.
Folder view list view, not selected ABBA, angelize.mp3, 1 of 7.
Okay, and the first item is ABBA with Angel Eyes. I'm going to press a space bar.
ABBA angelize.mp3.
Which will select that item because it wasn't selected, and I'll press enter.
Library iTunes.
And that's been imported right away into iTunes. Now I'm going to do it the other way. Now this method is provided as part of the scripts, and it's one I happen to like. I'm going to go into Windows Explorer by pressing the Windows key and E.
My computer, 3 view.
And I'm going to select Drive C.
Folder view list, local disk C. Folder view.
Press enter, and I'm going to select demo.
Demo.
Press enter.
Folder view list view. Not selected. ABBA Angel Eyes. MP3. 1 of 7.
Okay, so there's ABBA Angel Eyes. I'm going to arrow down.
ABBA as good as new. MP3.
So there's the next one. ABBA as good as new. I'm going to select from here to the end of the list with Control Shift End, which is obviously a common procedure within Windows Explorer.
Selected. ABBA, comma, chickity.
I've done that. I'm going to press Control C to copy all of those 6 tracks to the clipboard.
Copy selected text to clipboard.
I'm going to Alt Tab back over to iTunes.
iTunes. iTunes. ABBA Angel Eyes.
Okay, and we're being told there's ABBA Angel Eyes there, which is the one we put there. I'm going to press Control Shift V, which will paste the contents of the clipboard directly into iTunes.
Paste it from Windows Explorer. iTunes.
Now let's see what we've got. I'm going to move back to the library with iTunes modifier I, so we know where we are.
Moving to library.
And I'm going to press Tab twice.
Edit. List iTunes.
And arrow down.
ABBA Angel Eyes.
So there's the first one we put there.
ABBA as good as new.
It seems to have worked.
ABBA Chiquitita. Elvis Presley, the girl of my best friend. Everly Brothers, wake up little Susie. James Blunt, you're beautiful. Jim Reeves, you're the only good thing.
Perfect. So we've got our 7 tracks there. In order to manipulate any of these tracks, we need to know how to select them. And by manipulation, I mean, for example, copying them to the iPod, deleting the tracks, and so on. And there are various ways that you can select the tracks in this list. Most of them are fairly straightforward and are probably known to you. If you arrow to a track, it is automatically selected, so there's no problem there. So a lot of what we'll be doing is just manipulating individual tracks in this demonstration, so that's what I'll be doing. If you want to select tracks in a continuous range, you press Shift and down arrow, and yours will say the word selected together with the track name so that you know it's selected. If you want to select all the tracks, for example in preparation for deleting from the iPod, you would press Control A. So all of those methods are fairly self-explanatory. However, it's also possible to select what we call non-contiguous tracks. So if you were importing tracks from a CD, which we're going to do in a short while, you may want tracks 1, 3, 5, 7, and 9, and that is certainly possible to do. However, because of the interaction that we need to do with the contents of the screen, it needs to be done in a slightly different way. So you have 4 keys that you need to be concerned with in this situation. You have what I call the list key, activated with iTunes modifier L. And this will always put you at the top of the list of tracks in whichever view you happen to be facing. So that could be the iPod, it could be the library where we are now, it could be a CD, and so on. The next pair of keys are the navigation keys, and these are iTunes modifier down arrow and up arrow. And these will simply move through the contents of the screen. The last key is the multiple selection key. And the idea is that what you will do is you'll move with the navigation keys to the track that you want to select. You will then press iTunes modifier J, which is the multiple selection key, and that will add it to the selection. You'll then move to the next one that you want to select with the iTunes modifier down arrow, for example. Again, you'll press the multiple selection key, and again, that will be added. So, let's try that out. I'm going to delete 2 tracks here and see if we're left with 7. Let's read the status bar with insert page down.
7 songs, 1.1 hours, 24.5 MBP.
Okay, that's fine. I'm not sure that it will take 1 hour or just over to hear those 7 songs. I think that's a bit of an exaggeration, but there are certainly 7 songs in the list. Now, let's press the list key, iTunes modifier L.
Track list, ABBA Angel Eyes, ABBA Angel Eyes.
Okay, and it said track list, and you probably heard Jaws say move to library earlier on. All the messages that we're giving to the visually impaired user are delivered using the JAWS message voice, as against on-screen data delivered, of course, using the PC cursor voice. I'm going to use iTunes modifier down arrow.
ABBA as good as new. ABBA Chiquitita. Elvis Presley, the girl of my best friend. Everly Brothers, wake up little Susie.
Okay, so let's delete the Everly Brothers. So iTunes modifier J.
Multiple selected. Everly Brothers, wake up little Susie.
And come down.
James Blunt, you're beautiful. Jim Reeves, you're the only good thing.
And we'll delete that as well.
Multiple selected. Jim Reeves, you're the only good thing.
So we've got those selected. I'll press delete.
Our iTunes dialog. Are you sure you want to remove the selected items from the list? Remove button.
Press enter.
iTunes.
Let's read the status line.
5 songs, 10603 total time, 21.5 MB.
Okay, that's fine. I'm not so sure that it's right about its timings, as I've already said, but at least it's telling us that we've got 5 songs in our library, which is what we asked for. Now, I paused the recording, and I've actually put the songs back, the 2 that we deleted, because I actually want to demonstrate something else a bit later, and we'll need quite a number of songs to do that.
7 songs, 1, 10, 24.
Okay, so we've got 7 songs in there now. Okay, time now to import some songs from a CD. I've grabbed a CD here. It's a compilation one. I thought that would be a good way of describing to you how all this works. What we need to do is make sure that we're at the library, so iTunes Modify I.
Moving to library.
And we're going to, this time, interact with the category list, or the source list. So we've got the library here. If I press insert up arrow, do a say line command.
Library.
It's telling me I'm at the library. If I arrow down.
Podcasts. Party Shuffle. Music Store. Brian's iPod.
Okay.
90s music. My top rated.
Okay, all sorts of different things here. And in this list, in a moment, we're actually going to have our CD, which is actually called Hits of 1997. I'm going to put disc 1 of this 2-disc set into the CD-ROM drive, and it's going to go out onto the internet because I have a broadband connection. It's going to automatically grab the album name and the track title for us, and we're automatically in the source list going to be placed.
My top rated, New Hits 1997.
There we go, and it's saying New Hits 1997.
New Hits 1997.
Just did another say line, and it's automatically placed us in the right spot on the source list, so that we didn't have to arrow up and down, although if you did need to do that, it's about 4 or 5 items down the list. We can now press the tab key.
Edit.
And again.
List iTunes.
And we can explore the tracks on the CD.
1. Underwater Love, Smoke City. 2. Unbreak My Heart, Tony Braxton. 3. Where Do You Go, No Mercy. 4. Don't Let Go, Love, En Vogue. 5. Step by Step, Whitney Houston. 6. Gotta Be You, 3T. 7. Fresh, Gina G.
Okay, so there are about 20, and we could come down to item number 20 if we wanted. And by the way, if you want to navigate any of these lists, whether it be the source list or the track list, you can use first letter navigation. So if you have 1,000 or 2 songs in your iTunes library, you don't have to continually use down arrow, you'll be glad to know. If you know that the song that you want to interact with begins with the letter S, you can type that. Or, for example, if you want to find the stylistics in your library, you might type ST very quickly in order to get to the right part of the list. So you can do that very easily. I'm going to interact with this Tony Braxton track, Unbreak My Heart. So that was track number 2, I think. So if I arrow up.
1. Underwater Love, Smoke City.
And come down a bit.
2. Unbreak My Heart, Tony Braxton.
Now, I might not be sure if that's the right track or not, so I can press enter in order to play it. And in a moment, the CD will stop. There we go. That's fine. I'll just press the space bar in order to pause that. I'm going to talk about the playback of tracks a little bit later on. But I just wanted to show you that you could, if you were not sure, if you'd selected the correct track, that you could in fact play it to confirm that this was really what you wanted to import into your iTunes library. Because some people can't remember all the titles, can they? So it's often a good idea just to listen to a bit of the track to make sure it's what you want. You can, of course, use any of these selection methods that I previewed earlier on in order to carry out an import on any of a number of tracks. Now, in terms of importing, what we're going to do is press Shift and F10, which again, there is a script attached to this keystroke to make sure that the right context menu is activated, because in this instance, but not always, we want the context menu for the track. So I'm going to press Shift F10.
Context menu, get info.
And I'm going to arrow down.
My rate, convert selection to ARC.
And it says convert selection to AAC. Now, this occupies a lesser amount of space on your hard disk than does MP3, for example. But if you were to select the relevant options within the preferences of the iTunes application, and again we detail this in the manual, you will be able to choose from any one of five different formats that you can convert to. So AAC is the default, but you could also choose MP3, of course, because the iPod is capable of playing MP3 files. And what this means is that if you have, say, an MP3 file in your iTunes library, you can convert it to AAC, or in fact, if you really wanted to, you could use iTunes as a conversion tool to convert to and from any one of these five formats if you really felt like it. So what you're beginning to see, I hope already, is that, yes, you can transfer files to an iPod for listening to music while on the move. Not that we've done that yet, but I've already explained that it's possible. But we're starting to see some of the music management capabilities coming out here. So you're starting to see that you can use this tool not only for ripping tracks from your CD collection to a variety of formats, but you can also use it as an audio conversion tool to convert files from one format to another as well. Having got all that out of the way, I'm going to convert this to the AAC format, which of course the iPod can play. And I'm going to press Enter to do that. Now I've selected the right option.
Leaving menus.
And the conversion is now taking place. It won't take too long. I can hear the CD-ROM drive spinning. And we'll know that the conversion has happened because we'll hear a sound play. And then what we'll be able to do is to go off to our music library and check that it's actually there. There's the sound. Okay, so that's now been converted. I'm going to eject the CD so we're not cheating.
Library.
Okay, and immediately I did that, it's gone back to the library in the source list, and JAWS announced that automatically for us. So now I'm going to press Tab a couple of times.
Edit. List iTunes.
And arrow down.
ABBA Angel Eye. ABBA. Elvis Presley. Everly Brothers. James Blunt. Jim Reeves. Tony Braxton. Unbreak My Heart.
And there it is. And if we wanted to rename that, again, another script comes into play. We can press F2.
Edit Tony Braxton, Unbreak My Heart.
Which will allow me to do that. I'm in an edit box with the text highlighted, so I can type straight over the top, or I can edit the text, do what I want. Press Enter.
iTunes.
And we're back to iTunes again. Now, of course, the main thing that we want to be able to do at this stage, now we've got our library in order, is to transfer music to the iPod. And this really couldn't be simpler. There are a couple of ways of being able to do it. Let's go to the library.
Moving to library.
Okay, I'm going to Tab.
Edit.
And again.
List iTunes.
And arrow down.
ABBA Angel Eyes.
List time.
ABBA Elvis Presley, The Girl of My Best Friend.
Okay, I like that one. I'm going to copy that to the clipboard.
Copied.
I'm going to tab back to the source list.
List library.
Arrow down.
Pod Party. Music store. Brian's iPod.
There's Brian's iPod. There's nothing on there at the moment. Let's tab twice.
Edit. List iTunes.
And simply paste it in there.
Pasted. Updating iPod. Please wait.
And it's telling me that it's updating the iPod automatically. And in a short while, it will say that the process is complete.
iPod update complete.
And there it is. It's updated and it's complete. Now, if you wanted to double check that everything is okay during the updating process, we do have an iPod update key, which is the grave accent key on the computer keyboard situated to the immediate left of the figure 1. And that will certainly advise you of the updating process as well. Okay, so we've now got our track on our iPod. Let's double check that. If I press the list key at this stage, do you remember that was iTunes modifier L?
Track list 1 Elvis Presley, The Girl of My Best Friend.
Okay, that makes sure that we're on the list. If we arrow down, there's absolutely nothing there. So that's the only item that we have on the iPod. So we could go away and listen to that, or we could add more tracks to it. The other way of doing it, let's just do it so that you've got the full picture here. I'll tab back over to the source list.
List, Brian's iPod.
And press L.
Library.
That's another way of getting to the library. And now I can tap twice.
Edit. List iTunes.
And this time I'm going to select James Blunt. So I'm going to press J.
James Blunt, you're beautiful.
Copy that.
Copied.
Tab to the source list.
List library.
Press B.
Brian's iPod.
And this time I'm going to open the contents of the iPod to a new window. And this will be essential when I come to describe the next part anyway. And we do that with iTunes modifier N.
Opening contents of iPod a new window.
And I'm going to paste it in there again with Control V.
Pasted. Updating iPod. Please wait.
And the purpose of that was it really has opened the contents of the iPod in a new window. And this would mean that this would be perhaps a little bit of a quicker way of copying tracks manually from the iPod.
iPod update complete.
There we go, it's updated. From the library, I'm sorry, to the iPod. Because you could Alt-Tab over to the library now if you wanted to. You could copy a track, Alt-Tab back to the iPod and paste it in there. So that'd be another very convenient way of being able to do it. I'm going to Alt-F4 to close this window down.
iTunes.
So we're back to the regular iTunes application, because I'm just going to describe this next part, because we don't have a great number of tracks in order to be able to demonstrate it properly. That's the manual way of transferring material to an iPod, but there is a more automated way of doing it, and that is called the autofill facility. And what this does is it takes the contents of an iTunes music library or a playlist, whichever you've selected, you have full control over it, you choose the source, and it will either take a random selection of those tracks and put them on your iPod if you want to, or it will try and import the whole library or playlist, whatever it is that you want really. So this is, as I say, a much more automated route of transferring material to the iPod, and it can be very effective. So the procedure is this. You select the iPod from the source list. You press iTunes modifier N to go into a new window. You then press iTunes modifier S, which is the keystroke to select the source from which the autofill will take place. That brings up a vertical list, and usually the library is checked. And that's the selected source. And JAWS will tell you as you arrow up and down this list what is the selected source by saying the word checked. But you could arrow to a playlist if you wanted to, if you had one created. You arrow to the source you want in any event and press enter. Now we hit a difficulty, because the next part of this autofill facility relies upon the manipulation of two checkboxes. So we've had to introduce a bit of a workaround to this one, because JAWS does not detect the state of these checkboxes, even with the JAWS cursor. I haven't been able to find a way of detecting these. So, the first checkbox is choose songs randomly, and its state is toggled with iTunes modifier C. And if this is checked, it will obviously choose a random selection of songs from the source. If it's not, then it will try and import the whole source. When you press this keystroke repeatedly, it will say, choose songs randomly checkbox has changed, or words to that effect. Now, you might think, well, what's the point of that, if it's not telling you the state? Well, what you could do is press the keystroke to change the status of the checkbox. Then you could activate the autofill facility with iTunes modifier A, and once the update has taken place, you can arrow up and down. And clearly, if the songs are in a random order, other than alphabetical, the checkbox is obviously checked. And the checkbox will remain so until you uncheck it. Even if you quit iTunes and go back into it, conveniently, it stays at the state that you've selected. Now, the other checkbox is exactly the same. And this is the replace all songs with the autofill facility. So if you have tracks on your iPod already and the checkbox is checked, it will replace all the songs currently on your iPod with the newly selected source. If it's unchecked, it will add to the songs which already exist. So again, this will require a little bit of experimentation, but again, the checkbox stays in the condition you left it at, which is very useful. So the keystroke to toggle that status is iTunes modifier R. Once you've got the checkboxes as you want them, to reiterate, what you do is press iTunes modifier A to commence the autofill process, and the songs are transferred, according to how you've set the checkboxes and the source list up, to your iPod. Again, consult the manual on this, because I've probably done a much better job of explaining the autofill facility in the manual than I have here. So it's always a good idea to consult the manual for the authoritative word on any subject. Now, let's go back to some kind of familiar territory, because I'm going to talk about the playback facilities now. We have dealt with one or two aspects of the music management system, but we're going to deal with the rest of them. So I'm going to go back to the library.
Moving to library.
And tab to our list of tracks.
Edit. List. iTunes.
Come down.
ABBA. Angel Eyes. ABBA. Elvis Presley. The Girl of My Best Friend. Everly Brothers. Wake Up Little Susie.
Okay, let's start with that one. The Everly Brothers. I'm going to press enter in order to play it. And there it is playing. As I said earlier, I can press the space bar in order to pause the track. And again to restart it. I can adjust the volume independent of the screen reader, which is really good. So I can press control down arrow repeatedly, and that will decrease the volume, and control up arrow increases the volume. And I can still use JAWS. And I would want to use JAWS because I can read the title of the current track with iTunes modifier T.
Everly Brothers, Wake Up Little Susie.
Let's just turn that off. What seems to happen sometimes is that, especially if you've encoded or imported a track into your iTunes music library from a CD using iTunes, is that first of all, on the screen, it will display the title of the track, and then it will change all by itself and show the artist, and then the album name that it's come from. And so you may have to press that keystroke a couple of times in order to get the information you want. Now, the next thing you can do is to press iTunes modifier E.
Current position, 0 minutes 43 seconds.
Okay, it doesn't say that on the screen, 0 minutes 43 seconds. It actually says 0 colon 43. What we've done is translated that into an hours, minutes and seconds format. So it's much easier to understand. And this is particularly good with audible books, because I don't know about you, but one of the things I like to know is really to take a mental note of sometimes where I'm starting to read a particular book so that I can go back to that particular passage at a later date if I want to. And so this is really important. So it will say if you press that keystroke, for example, 2 hours, 9 minutes and 43 seconds. So starting the Everly Brothers track back up again, if I were to press the enter key, that would go back to the beginning of it. If I press the right arrow, that takes me to the next track, and if I were to press left arrow, that takes me back a track. When playing audible books, you can press Control Shift right arrow to go to the next section of the book, and Control Shift left arrow to go to the previous section. One of the really great things that you can do with this playing aspect of the software is to create what's called a party shuffle mix. So, okay, you've got all your friends coming round for a party. It's time not only to get the party started, but to keep it going as well. And this is what you're going to want to do, and you can do that if you've got lots and lots of tracks in your iTunes music library. You can let iTunes be the DJ and take over the arranging of the music for you if you want to, and it can be very good to do that. So, how can you deal with a party shuffle? Well, first of all, you have to select it from the source list. Okay, so let's go to the library.
Move into library.
And arrow down to party shuffle.
Podcast. Party shuffle.
There it is. Party shuffle, essentially, is the contents of your library mixed up in a random order. Okay, so the theory is that you're not going to know what's coming next, and you're going to have a good blend of music, but with the JAWS interface that we've created, you actually are going to know what's coming next. Not only that, but you can control how many songs you're going to know about. So if I tab here to the track list.
List.
Okay, we've got no edit box here because you can't search in Party Shuffle. The next thing we have to do is to press F5, which refreshes the screen because we've been adding tracks to the library and we have been taking them away. So the Party Shuffle that's probably being displayed at the moment is not up to the minute in terms of what we've got. So I'll press F5 and that will sort that out for us. Now comes another slight variation because we can't use the arrow keys here, the up and down arrow. Because this screen is actually presented for ease of visual reading in a multicoloured format, the best way of being able to navigate the screen is by using the list key, iTunes modifier L, to go to the top, and then the navigation keys, iTunes modifier up and down arrow.
Track list, ABBA, Chiquitita.
Okay, so ABBA Chiquitita is the first one. Remember that in our library, it's, I think it's Angel Eyes. So it's mixed them up. Let's go down.
ABBA As Good As New. Tony Braxton, Unbreak My Heart.
Right, that should make it more obvious to you that it's mixed them up.
Jim Reeves, You're the Only Good Thing.
Now, if you want to start playing the Party Shuffle at that point, you can, of course, play it from the beginning. But if you wanted to start it from there, you could press iTunes modifier K, which marks that point as the beginning of the selection.
Selected. Jim Reeves, You're the Only Good Thing.
And then press Enter. And there it is. It started playing the Party Shuffle mix from the Jim Reeves track. Now, at the moment, it's displaying, I think, the next 15 songs. It's probably not, actually, because there aren't 15 tracks in our library. But if there were more than 15 in the Party Shuffle mix, it would display only 15. There is a way of changing that. You can change the number of upcoming songs in the shuffle mix by pressing iTunes modifier U.
Upcoming songs. Context menu 100. 0.
Okay, and if we arrow down.
5 checked.
Oh, it's 5 it's displaying. Right, okay, fine. Let's arrow down.
10. 15.
And if you want to see 15, you can press Enter. And in fact, it goes up to values of 100, I think. So there's a really a flexible way of you being able to see and control how many songs you're going to see in the Party Shuffle. So if you wanted to particularly keep some of your songs as being a bit of a mystery to your sighted friends who may be taking a quick sneak preview of the computer screen to see what's coming up, you could control that there by making it quite a low number. Let's escape.
Leaving menus.
Now, if there's a song in your library and you can't see that in the Party Shuffle for some reason, you can select that from the library. You can activate the context menu, come down to Add to Party Shuffle and press Enter and it will be added. And similarly, you can, let's say, for example, you have a favourite song and you can't see it in the list. Here is something you can do. Let's go to the library.
Move into library.
And we'll tab over there.
Edit. List iTunes, ABBA Angel Eyes.
Now, if we want that to be played next as part of the Party Shuffle mix, we can again activate the context menu.
Context menu, get info.
Come down.
My shows reset, convert I convert, so play next in Party Shuffle.
And there it is, play next in Party Shuffle. So if someone had asked you if you had a particular track, you could put that on for them so that they could listen to it. And that would be a great way of adding that track to the Party Shuffle mix. So there's lots you can do there, lots of control that you've got. The next thing you can do is to generate a playlist. Now, I'm quite sure that we've all, in the past, recorded audio cassettes of our favourite songs from our record collection and so on. Well, a playlist is exactly like that. You can create a playlist of your favourite songs, maybe, from your iTunes library. They may suit a particular mood that you're in. There may be a few songs that you want to hear while you're travelling around someplace. Or even maybe you're doing some exercises and you need a certain selection of music to play for 30 minutes. Well, you could create a playlist for that. There are a few examples of uses of playlists. It's very easy to create one. All you do is you press Control N to create a new playlist. You type in what you want it to be, and then you press Enter. In fact, we'll do that now.
Library edit untitled playlist.
And we'll call this first playlist. And press Enter.
iTunes.
And that will have now appeared in the source list. Let's go to the library.
Moving to library.
So we're actually at the top of the source list. If I press F.
First playlist.
There's first playlist. Okay, now if we want to add songs to the playlist, we'll press L to go to the library.
Library.
Because we're still in the source list. Let's tab over to the track list.
Edit. List. iTunes.
And arrow down.
ABBA Angel Eye. ABBA As Good As. ABBA Chiquitita. Elvis Presley. Everly Brothers Wake Up Lit. Jim Reeves, You're the Only. Tony Braxton, Unbreak My Heart.
There's Tony Braxton. We'll copy her to the clipboard.
Copied.
We'll tab over to the source list.
List. Library.
We'll press F.
First playlist.
Tab twice.
Edit. List. iTunes.
And paste it into the playlist.
Pasted.
Now, let's see what we've got here.
Track list. 1. Tony Braxton, Unbreak My Heart.
I pressed my list key, which took me to the top of the list. That's the only track in the playlist. Now, if you wanted to add to that, of course you could do, at any time, just by copying tracks to it. You can also create a playlist with selected tracks. So in other words, if you wanted to select a whole bunch of tracks from your library, you could do that. And then when you're through with doing it, you can press Ctrl-Shift-N. And that will, again, ask you for the name of a playlist. You'll press Enter once you've typed it in, and all of the selected songs will be ported over to the newly created playlist. You can delete a playlist, of course, by focusing on it in the source list and pressing Delete. You can delete a track from a playlist by focusing on the track and pressing Delete, and so on and so forth. Again, a good use of a playlist would be going back to the autofill facility that I told you about earlier on. If iTunes had created a really good selection of tracks from your iTunes library, then one of the things you might like to do is to keep that autofill. So you could select all the tracks in the autofill list with Ctrl-A. You could press Ctrl-Shift-N, create a new playlist based on the selection. Just type the name in, press Enter, and there you've got it. So, lots of things you can do, and don't forget that obviously once you've got the tracks in the way that you like them in a playlist, you can select all the songs in a playlist with Ctrl-A, copy them to the clipboard with Ctrl-C, go over to your iPod and paste them in there, and then you can take them to wherever you want to take them to. There's also something called a smart playlist, which is really good. You can press Ctrl-Alt-N. And that will bring up a dialogue box where you can actually specify lots of different advanced criteria on which songs you would like in the playlist. If you've got lots of tracks and lots of albums in your iTunes library, you can tab through this dialogue box and you're able to specify what text should be in the title of a song or what the album name should be. It really is equivalent to the advanced find dialog box within Microsoft Outlook. And once you've pressed enter on the OK button, iTunes will go away and it will create a playlist from your library based on all that criteria that you've selected. It's a very accessible dialog box. It contains predominantly combo boxes, but there is at least one edit field in there and some check boxes. Nothing difficult about navigating that dialog box at all. Now, we're almost out of time, and before I make some closing comments, which I do want to do, I want to show you one other little bit of support that we've put in here, and this relates to podcasting, which is a relatively new field to me, I have to say, but essentially it's, as I understand it, an audio program which is available in an MP3 format, and the podcast can contain music and spoken word material. The authors of these podcasts seem to put them up onto the web fairly frequently, and what they will do on their website is they will give you what's called a podcast feed, and it's this feed that you will use in order to ensure that iTunes knows which podcasts to download. There is a podcast directory in iTunes, but as yet that is not supported by the scripts. It probably will be. It looks quite easy to do, but it's not supported at this current time. So what we're going to do is we're going to add the Main Menu podcast to iTunes. You have control over whether iTunes will automatically download the updated podcast when it's available. I personally choose not to have that selected because I want control over when I'm going to download the podcast. You can also tell it whether you want it to erase the last program that you had in there. So let's say, for example, in the case of Main Menu, you may want it to keep the previous week's podcast when it downloads a new one, but you may not want it to. So all these options are available and you can control them very easily through the options dialog box. But I'm on the Main Menu website now, and there are podcast feeds for each and every day of the week. And I want the Wednesday one, obviously, because that is the Main Menu program, together with one or two other things usually. So let's find Wednesday here.
Tuesday. Link HTTP.
It's Wednesday we want.
Wednesday. Link http://www.radio.org/news/xml/podcast.php/pgm=Wednesday.
And that's what the feed will sound like, so I'm going to select all of that.
Selected. Link HTTP.
Copy it to the clipboard.
Copy selected text to clipboard.
And now I can alt-tab over to iTunes.
iTunes. iTunes 1. Tony Braxton, Unbreak My Heart.
Okay, that's fine. Let's go back to our library.
Moving to library.
With the scripts installed and running, by the way, the iTunes window is automatically maximized. Now I'm going to press Alt-A for the advanced menu.
Context menu, switch to mini player.
And arrow down.
Open subscribe to podcast.
And that's the option I want, subscribe to podcast. I'm going to press Enter.
Leaving menus, subscribe to podcast dialog, URL, edit.
And it's asking for the URL. I'll paste it in there.
Pasted.
Let's just check it's in there.
http://www.
Yeah, it sounds promising. I'll press Enter.
iTunes, http://www.
Just silence that. And the podcast is now being downloaded. From the source list.
Moving to library. Podcasts.
Podcasts is the second item down. So you can tab.
Edit. List iTunes.
And arrow down.
ACB Radio Replay Podcast. ACB Radio Podcast.
Okay, that's what we want. That's the only podcast I have in the list at this time. And you can activate a context menu for that with Shift F10.
Context menu, update podcast.
There's the update podcast item. This is particularly useful if you choose not to have them download automatically, because then you could press enter on here to grab the latest program. We don't need any more items from that context menu just now.
Leaving menus.
If I use iTunes modifier T...
Downloading replay for Wednesday, 29 June 2005.
Okay, that will tell me, obviously, the status of it, and it's downloading it at the moment. I can't do anything with it until it's downloaded. But once it is downloaded, I can press Enter in order to play the podcast and, indeed, use my conventional keys for altering the volume of the podcast and stopping and starting it and so on. In fact, while that's downloading, it gives me a chance to tell you about the cost of the script, which is £30. That's about $45. That will entitle you to receive the scripts, the authorization file, of course, encoded with your JAWS serial number, and free updates to the end of the year. Those updates are quite important because, as I said at the beginning, we're learning more and more about iTunes all the time, so there are fairly frequent build changes at the moment, and what you should do is use the Internet Update facility, which is provided as part of the scripts, that's why it's there, activated with iTunes modifier W. That will take you to our website, so you need to have an internet connection for that. Then you can check the version number on the web page of the latest build of the scripts. You can check it against your version number that you have installed. You can get your version number of the scripts by pressing Insert Q when iTunes is in focus. But that's why the Internet Update facility is there. You can also get technical support, which is given to you by email. The manual is, of course, on the website, and you can get it in a variety of different formats. We can send it to you by email if you really want it, in a Word document or plain text. If you want a print or braille copy, we will have to charge for that because of the low cost of the product as it is at the moment, but we'll certainly do that, certainly available. I think the other thing to say is that obviously the more people who purchase the scripts, the more likely it is that time will be assigned to developing the project even further. I personally think it's quite good as it is, but we could do much more with it. We could make the podcast directory accessible, for example. We could have a good crack at making the iTunes music store accessible, which would be a really good thing to be able to do. But obviously, we need to prioritize things, and if there is enough customer interest, we'll certainly do those things. Okay, hopefully the podcast should be downloaded by now.
ACB Radio Replay Podcast.
Okay, let's press enter on it. And there's the podcast, and it's playing. We can read the title.
Replay for Wednesday, 29 June 2005.
And check the time.
Current position, 0 minutes, 09 seconds.
Okay, so it's working. So that's brilliant. So you can get ACB Radio's main menu or any of the other great programs within ACB Radio delivered directly into iTunes, which is fantastic. So it's not only a vehicle for managing your music and transferring the music to the iPod. You can listen to books with it and listen to radio programs in the form of podcasts as well. Well, I hope you found this interesting. And if you have any questions, of course, you can visit the support page on our website at www.tandt-consultancy.com. And of course, you can download a trial version of the interface from there. At the moment, just go to our latest news page, which is clearly labeled from the home page. And then you'll see the information about the iTunes scripts from the latest news page. If you want to ask me any questions at all, you can email Brian, B-R-I-A-N, dot Hartgen, H-A-R-T-G-E-N, at T&T, that's T-A-N-D-T, hyphen consultancy.com.
All right, everyone. I have with me Woody Anna Dresner, who has written a book through National Braille Press on the iPod Shuffle, and especially with today, all the exciting news about iTunes version 4.9, and with a lot of exciting news coming out about JAWS things with iTunes, we thought, well, what the heck? Let's get her on the phone and talk a little bit about her book and a little bit about her, and we can find out all about the iPod Shuffle together. Welcome, Anna. How are you?
Doing good. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing well. Well, let's first start out by, can you tell us a little bit about you, Anna?
Well, I've been blind all my life. I love music. I love, listening to and playing music. So, that's always been an interest. In terms of things like technology, I got involved with, I was working with the Apple II, the good old Apple IIe in high school, and then the Braille and Speak when that came out, and kind of did some training with people at the Carroll Center, training people on computers. And most recently, I've been working for National Braille Press since the summer of 1999.
Well, that's great. Now, what musical instruments do you play?
I sing, and I play guitar and banjo and a little bit of fiddle, a little bit of flute.
Well, what got you interested in the iPod Shuffle?
Well, it's always interesting. You hear about iPods, and on top of everything else, of course, living out in Hawaii as I do, not even in Honolulu, but on the Big Island, there's a lot going on. You don't get to see a lot of things, and so I hadn't even seen an iPod, but my boss got one for her teenage son. Diane Croft is my boss, by the way. Anyway, she got one for her son for Christmas and fell in love with it, said, this is the greatest thing since sliced bread. We need to do a book on it. I said, oh, that's great, but it doesn't have a screen. I mean, it has a screen and no speech. I don't know how usable that would be. And, of course, I had been looking for something, too, because some way to buy music online and listen to it in a portable fashion. And I had a MUVO player from Audible, and I could buy music from the Real Player music store, but I would need a bigger player to do that very much because it's only 128 megabytes. So I was certainly interested in having something with more So then when the Shuffle came out with no screen, you figure, well, who knows if the software is accessible, but at least the hardware has to be, so that's half the battle. It seemed like a fun thing to pursue and just see how it would work.
Yeah. Now, can you tell us a little bit about how your book is laid out?
It's basically, for the most part, it's a journal. It's like a day in the life of Anna Dresner going through the process of deciding to get one, ordering it, getting it, installing the software, reinstalling the software, reinstalling different software, and doing all kinds of different things to try to figure out the best way to make it work over the course of several months. And also along the way, I do talk about, you know, kind of what I was using it for and what came up in terms of, pluses and minuses, and then putting music into the computer, good ways to do that, and trying to organize my collection of music on the computer that I imported into the computer. And then the whole thing, along the way, I heard somewhere along the line that there was such a thing as podcasting. And so there's a little bit about just a very basic introduction as I figured out, you know, what this was and a couple of possible ways of listening to podcasts. Then at the end, I do have, for easy reference, and also for anybody who just doesn't really feel like hearing about all the traumas and travails and everything else, there is a listing of everything I found out as organized as I could make it, with step-by-step directions and URLs for the different sites that I mentioned.
Yeah, now why did you decide to take, a journal approach to the book? I thought it was brilliant of you, by the way.
Thank you.
It really gave the book, a feel of, hey, I'm walking along with Anna as she's doing the iPod Shuffle, whole determination thing,
Well, I'm glad that worked out. It's not something I've ever done before. The other books that I've written have been very much, I go out and find out what I can and then make it as logical as I can and try to explain it, from a tutorial kind of perspective. It was really Diane's idea to do it in a journal format, partly just because everything is so new that we knew that this book was going to be out of date in certain respects by the time people started reading it, because it's all just moving so fast, that at least the experiential part has some value. And I hope that maybe it will help people learn how to learn about technology a little bit.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, it really does, because, it kind of takes them through your entire thought process. You were very, very good about, walking people through, okay, now I'm trying this. And you were writing it almost on a daily basis. You put the dates in the book, I saw.
Right.
Almost every day. And it kind of made you go, oh, gosh, now, what happened on the next day? It was kind of actually neat reading. I wouldn't think I would really enjoy that kind of technology-oriented book, this way, writing it in this kind of a style. But I really, really enjoyed, reading that, because it really kind of guided you through, both the pain and the struggles of dealing with the technology and your frustrations and then your happiness about getting it to work. And it's like, especially for, new computer users, it gives them a sense of, hey, I can do this too. So I really, really great that you did it that way.
I hope so. I hope it really does let people know that, there's really nothing magic here, and there's also nothing that they can really, it's probably not them when something goes wrong, there's probably just some goofy thing, and so then, think about it. Is there something I can do to make this better? Is there someone I can talk to? Just that whole process, and I hope that, I tried to put in things like when my sighted husband helped me out, too, to let people know that, hey, there are times that that's really useful, and that it just isn't always easy, but it's not their fault, and that you can kind of keep going with it and eventually maybe get what you wanted.
Yeah. Now, Apple, I don't know if you're aware of this, but Apple announced today that they dropped the prices on the 1 gigabyte iPod Shuffle. Did you hear about that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, they dropped it $30.
Oh, cool.
So the list is now 120, as I understand. And can you tell us, there's probably a lot of people who actually have not seen one. Could you tell us kind of what the iPod Shuffle looks like?
It looks a lot like your typical jump drive or thumb drive, whatever you want to call those things, that you plug into a USB port on your computer. It's kind of long and thin. It's about an inch across and about 4.5 inches long or so. I'm just, being roughly here, and maybe half an inch thick. So it's really small. It's really light. At one end, there's a USB port. There's a cap on it when you get it, and it also comes with another cap with a lanyard so you can stick it around your neck, which is kind of handy.
Yeah.
And then to plug it into your computer, you just plug it right into that, or you can get an extension cable, which if your computer is like mine, where all the ports are on the back except one, I hardly recommend.
Yeah, now at work I have a Dell, and they have those things where you lift up the front plate on the face of the computer, and the ports are at an angle, so you can't stick anything even into them. It's just exactly. It's sort of crazy. The design is just nuts.
Yep, that's the way the one on the front of mine is, and I couldn't plug the iPod in on that one directly. I was running around to the back for a while until I got the cable.
Yeah. Yeah, now, can you tell us how many buttons on the iPod Shuffle?
Well, basically, on the front, you have a round button with a ring around it, and you press, if you have it, if you're holding it, you've got the USB port at one end, you have that toward you, and the headphones jack is at the other end, then you hit the top of the ring to raise the volume and the bottom to lower the volume, the left side to go back a track and the right side to go forward a track. And if you hold it down, you move within the track. So that's really simple. I was a little concerned when I first saw it and saw just this solid ring, wondering how that would be. But since there's only four controls on it, it's really, I've never, expected the volume to go up and gone back a track or anything.
Now, does it have folders? I mean, it does not. Okay, so it's strictly just moving track to track.
Data goes into a different place, but music and anything audible, anything you listen to, just goes into one folder. And I don't think there's any way to really do anything different with that.
Okay.
Then on the back, you have a switch that's kind of a flat slider. It doesn't stick out at all. You basically just kind of put your finger on it and slide it back and forth. Occasionally I've had trouble getting it to move, but mostly it's fine. And basically it's off, or you slide it toward the middle, you get ordered play, or all the way you get shuffle play. So again, that's pretty simple. And then there's a battery status button next to it. I thought it was a sticker on the back because it's very thin, but it doesn't stick up much, but it is a button, but it just indicates with a light, so it doesn't. Not so helpful for us, but at least it's there.
I know, that would be cool if you could push the button and it would say, you have 63% of your battery life or something.
Oh, that'd be nice.
That'd be nice, wouldn't it? Yeah. Okay, now can you put other things on it besides MP3s?
MP3, Wave, the AUC, I'm never sure how you pronounce that.
AAC, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And Audible.
I would assume then that Windows Media Audio content wouldn't be playable?
No, but they do have both. Within iTunes, there's a feature which can convert them to AAC 128 kbps. If they're higher than that, I assume it doesn't change the bitrate if it's lower. And also in Anapod Explorer, which is another program you can use, it has a feature that can convert them into WAVE or MP3. So you can put them on. And what it does is it will leave the original file alone on your computer and just convert it into a format that the iPod can handle.
Now, does it remember, let's say you're downloading podcasts to the iPod Shuffle, like all good podcast listeners should be doing. and let's say you're listening to one and it's like an hour long. Can you pause it? And then have it remember where you were from track to track? Let's say you move ahead of track or something.
No, once you move out of the track, you've lost it. Now, Audible content from audible.com does keep its place, I am told. I've been using It's a little complicated, but if you use iTunes, I have been told that it will, in fact, keep your place. And I was using iTunes at first, and then I started using Anapod Explorer more. That's another program that basically lets you drag and drop stuff directly into the iPod. And when I do that, it will play format for Audible, but it doesn't really do the bookmarking properly.
Ah, okay. Now, speaking of bookmarking, I understand there's an M4A format as well.
Yeah.
Now, from what I don't know enough about this to make sense of this, but from what I understand, you can actually set up bookmarks in M4A files as well. Can that only be done through iTunes?
Well, I'm not exactly sure. I looked up, when I was in the process of writing the book, I was trying to find out if there was some way to make other files bookmarkable. And the sites that I looked at, it looked like you could do it on the Mac, but not in Windows. Now, there's probably some, it looked extremely complicated, and I couldn't quite follow the whole thing, and so I kind of had to drop it. But yeah, with somehow converting your files into, I think it's M4B, which is the bookmarkable ones.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know a lot about that, unfortunately.
I don't either. It looked like there should, in theory, be a way to do it. I also know I looked at one pod-catching program called RSS Radio that claimed to be able to do it. I didn't end up going with that, and so I don't really know how well it worked. But it is, in theory, possible.
Okay. So I know we don't want to give too much away in reference to the book, but can you kind of give us a general overview of what it takes to actually get the iPod Shuffle, you know, set up and configured once you actually buy it?
Anapod, there is a program called Anapod Explorer that you can use that I think they claim that you don't necessarily have to put on iTunes first, but basically you really should install iTunes. And it will walk you through registering your software, the hardware, because you have to register the iPod with Apple before you can do anything with it. So.
Okay, that kind of unlocks it?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Now, I do know that Anapod Explorer claims that you can use their program if you have a Windows 98 or Millennium machine, because iTunes doesn't work with those, or at least this version of iTunes doesn't. So there is some kind of a workaround, but I think if you're using Windows, I don't know how you ever get your iPod registered under those conditions. You might have to go to someone else's computer or something. So your best bet is to install iTunes and activate the iPod. And, you can work with iTunes, directly. You cannot, at this point, use the iTunes Music Store for buying content, but the iTunes program on your computer, if you are using JAWS 6.0 or 6.2, 6.1, it really doesn't work. It only reads menus and dialog boxes. The other ones, it can read the screen, but basically only with your mouse cursor. So
okay.
Without any additional scripting, it is doable, but a pain.
What about WindowEyes?
Same, basically. WindowEyes, and I have to say, I don't use WindowEyes all the time. I did check out everything in my book using a WindowEyes demo and doing it to the best of my ability, but I just don't use it all the time. But
sure.
I could do everything with the WindowEyes cursor that I could do with a JAWS cursor.
Okay, great. So, I mean, both screen readers will actually be able to see everything on the screen. It's just a matter of not being able to tab around and stuff like that.
Right, and not being, moving up and down lists, you actually have to click on stuff if you want to activate it because you're using the mouse cursor.
Oh, I see. You can't even, arrow up and down in a list view.
No, it won't. It will, if you try to move around with your application keys, it just kind of sits there.
Uh-huh.
So you really have to go to your mouse cursor. And
what about if there's too much on the screen? Is there a scroll bar that you can click on to scroll the window? That's visible.
I guess page up and page down work. So I would switch back to my PC cursor and hit page down.
Right, right.
And then it would work, but it's hard. I mean, that's really tedious.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm used to it.
So that basically means make sure you search for really what you want, so you only get one screenful.
Yeah, I mean, fortunately, it does have basically the way iTunes is set up is there's like a library on the left side and music store and radio. If you left click on library and then you tab once, you're in an edit box where you can type a search term and hit enter, and then whatever you search for will show up on the and the right pane. So you can certainly narrow it somewhat.
Yeah. Now, what about, now the store you said is not accessible? Is it that the screen readers can't see the web pages?
Basically, yeah. I was able to search for a song, but I couldn't really tell what all the results were or any idea what kind of buttons might be there or it just doesn't all read. I'm
sure.
Not even sure what all it's doing.
Does Apple have a website interface where you can go outside and search the iTunes store outside of iTunes?
You can't buy music from the website, and I'm not even sure you can really search the store.
Okay.
I never found a way to do it. I think basically you're supposed to do all of that from within iTunes.
And what about the radio?
I haven't done the radio at all.
Okay. Okay. Well, are there any areas of the iPod Shuffle that you feel are not accessible?
Well, the device itself is fine. I mean, it's very simple to use. You know, you're either in shuffle play or regular play, and you can move around between tracks and all of that. It's really not, once you've got your content in it, you're fine.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
Except for the battery status.
Right, okay. And we already talked a little bit about iTunes. Now, I understand that there's some work going on right now and with Brian Hargin.
Yeah, it's so exciting. He read the book and got all inspired to write scripts. So.
Yeah, now I spoke with him, and we're actually going to have him on the Desert Skies podcast early next week. And we're going to be interviewing him on Sunday, actually. And he's going to tell us all about the scripts. And he told me today, I don't know if you've heard this or not, but he told me today that the manual for the scripts is 11 pages long.
Wow.
So, and have you tried iTunes 4.9 yet?
No. Has it actually come out?
Yes, it's available now.
Jeez, I checked my email like 3 hours ago. It's amazing that much could happen in the meantime.
Yeah, it came out early this morning, actually.
Okay.
And it has podcasting support built into it.
Okay.
And Brian is going to try and get that to work.
Did he say or have any idea whether it was how different 4.9 was or whether his work is wasted or?
No, he said his work works just fine.
Oh, cool.
So yeah, which is fantastic because he doesn't have to go back and redo a lot of things.
I mean, iTunes is a nice program. It does some lovely things. You know, it will manage all of your music. For the shuffle, because it doesn't hold all that much stuff, the autofill feature, I got a real kick out of having it just go through my library and grab stuff randomly and just kind of, have this sort of random radio station of sometimes music I hadn't even heard in a long time. And, it will import stuff and, it does a lot of the things that people might need, and it sounds like it's going to do even more. So as a program, it's really quite nice if you don't have to fight with it. Oh, and within Audible Books, it also, the shuffle doesn't have any way to move back and forth between sections within an Audible book. But you can, within iTunes, move to where you want to be and then synchronize it so that the shuffle is there. So at least if you knew that you wanted to skip a section, it's a little tedious, but you could, plug it in and move it. So, it does give some extra functionality to the shuffle. So
that's nice. Now, how about the pull-down menus? Is there a menu bar across the top?
Yeah, you hit Alt, it says nothing. But if you hit, okay. So
but if you click on it.
I'm hitting Alt, no problem. Me, or nothing. But if I hit,
Right. That's, I see, I hear that. Uh-huh. So it's bringing up a context menu as opposed to an actual pull-down menu. Very interesting.
But if you look at it with your, with a JAWS cursor, it shows that.
Sure, I hear that, uh-huh.
It does say across the top, file edit, controls, et cetera. So it looks,
sure.
I think visually it probably looks like a menu, but they're coming up as like separate little context menus. So
yeah.
Once you know that there's an edit menu or a controls menu, you can hit, Alt-E or Alt-C and work with the menu normally. And the dialog boxes work okay.
Yeah. Now, tell us about this other application. You've mentioned it a couple times. I think it's Anipod?
Yeah, Anipod Explorer. It's available from Red Chair Software. www.redchairsoftware.com, And what it does is basically make your shuffle look like in a basic standard removable drive.
Oh, so you just get a drive letter and you can just browse to it in Windows Explorer?
Yeah, with iTunes, you have to, within iTunes, tell it to enable something called disk usage first. And
okay.
Even without Anapod Explorer, it will show up in Windows Explorer as a drive, but you can't actually just copy and paste onto it. It won't work. So you have to bring up Anapod Explorer, and now they actually have a separate icon for the shuffle, so it's called Anapod Shuffler. And you bring that up, and then you have to go into it and then choose iPod Shuffle Memory. And then once that's open, so you actually have to do it through Anapod Explorer as opposed to directly through Windows Explorer.
Got it. Okay. So you can't just, you know, hit Windows R and type, you know, G colon and start copying files to it.
Right.
Yeah.
But you can, once that's open, you can copy to it. You can also, it is a choice on the Send To menu. So, you know, you can use it in a pretty standard way once that's open.
Sure, sure. Interesting.
It works very nicely. The only thing is that Audible content at the moment is, they're, for the regular iPods, they can handle, I think, all at least formats 2, 3, and 4. With the Shuffle, they said they have gotten not as quick response from Audible as they would like. And so far, they really... They can't support formats 2 and 3. It looks like they're there, but they won't play. And then with format 4, it will play, but it doesn't bookmark properly.
Ah.
So your Audible support is a little compromised. But it otherwise, you know, for other music files or podcasts or content from iTunes, if you happen to have, you know, music that somebody or you have purchased with help or whatever through iTunes, yeah, that's supposed to work. I haven't actually tried it, but that's supposed to work okay. Anapod Explorer is not a free program. You can buy a version just for the iPod Shuffle, which costs $20, or you can buy a version that will support all iPods for $30. And that does entitle you to lifelong upgrades. So I bought the $30 version because I figured, you know, who knows, maybe the other ones will be accessible at some point.
Yeah, in the future. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
And they seem pretty, you know, there's still some stuff from the very first release that I wish they would, you know, fix, and seems to be taking them a while, but they're doing a lot of things at once, and, you know, I think they're working on it, and, you know, certainly until iTunes is easier to use.
Audible is now doing podcasts. Did you know about that?
Didn't. I know about their RSS feeds, you know, that tell you what's new.
Sure, yeah. Well, they're doing podcasting now.
Huh.
So you can get magazines and newspapers and other content as well. You can actually download them using iPod or, you know, whatever catching client. And they're still protected. I mean, the files are still, you know, protected basically with your account information. So that would be interesting to see, you know, if those files that you actually download will work identically. They should. They say that they should in theory, as long as it's an Audible-capable device. But that'd be kind of interesting to see, you know, because then you could use iPodder and then use Anapod Explorer to copy them across and not even have to use iTunes at all.
Right. I mean, as it is with Audible content, I'm not using iTunes when I do that. I've just been using it for short stuff that you actually really want in format for, like, you know, radio broadcasts that include music, and listening to the other stuff on my old Otis player,
yeah.
You know, the other books. Because, you know, then you don't have to worry so much about the bookmarking business. But
exactly, yeah.
But then with iTunes working better, then, of course, you should have all of those features.
Right. Well, what areas do you think that Apple needs to work on in reference to accessibility with, with iTunes or the iPod Shuffle and... I mean, are there areas that you feel that would be, you know, a lot better if Apple were to kind of step up to the plate and make a few changes?
Well, I certainly think that in terms of iTunes, I'm really thrilled that Brian is doing all this work. I don't think he should have to. It seems like it ought to be easier than that. And then I was really excited that Brian was going to take a look at the store, but, you know, the iTunes Music Store. You know, see if you could do anything about that. And obviously, it would be nice if that worked. for Apple as well as for us, so that we can
sure
music from them. Of course, in regard to the larger iPods, it would be really lovely if there was some way to, to tap into what's in there to find out what's on the different screens. And
yeah, we need Rockbox on the iPod.
There you go. So, yeah, anything that could report what's on those screens, because, I think people would certainly get a kick out of, being able to use the bigger ones. I know I would. And it would be nice, this isn't even an accessibility thing so much. It would be lovely if iTunes actually was a better behaved program in Windows. I had a lot of trouble with it when I first installed it. My system got kind of messed up and I had to reinstall it. And I mean, I shouldn't say my whole system got messed up, but I did have it. It was like somehow or other things got locked up to a point that JAWS wouldn't run. And
yuck.
It was really a pain in the neck. And then I uninstalled iTunes and it took out my CD burning software. And, it's just, I think it could be, and then at one point I tried to reinstall it and it claimed that I had no disk space left, which was ludicrous. In the, 2 lines later on the same screen, it's saying there were 9 gigabytes left, So, there's just some really kind of goofy things like that where, it would be nice if it really worked better under Windows, in general, for everybody's sake.
Right, yeah, exactly, sure, yeah.
I will say that they have based on the people I talked to, and I certainly didn't talk to everybody, but just in general, I was incredibly impressed with Apple tech support. I mean, these folks, I never had anybody go, you're trying to do this without a screen,
They seem to
get it right away, and they tried their best to be helpful, and okay, well, that's the limits of what you're doing. Okay, in terms of, that's what you can do with the software, and that's not. Okay, so let's try this. And, and they were, telling me, one of them was telling me about the iPod Lounge, which is this sort of unauthorized forum for, iPod information. Well, I shouldn't tell you this, but there's a good way to find out. I was just really impressed with their willingness to talk to me and deal with the situation as it was and give the most honest help they could.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Well, I know you're probably not resting on your laurels there after writing this wonderful book, because you're probably working on something else, right? And so what else are you working on to get out there to us?
Yeah, the next thing is, the current project is something completely different. It's magic tricks set.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
When I was a kid, my brother got this set of, 100 easy magic tricks or whatever, and I'm sure my parents would have helped me with it because they were great, but, I was kind of like, oh, I'd love to do this, but, it's just too much work and whatnot, and so that was kind of the impetus for it. But, yeah, basically we're picking out some tricks that are pretty easy to do, and then I'm going through all the instructions, and I'll, be trying to add stuff to try to make it really easy so that hopefully children of all ages, from kids to adults, can buy this and delve into it with minimal help and go for it. So.
Oh, that's going to be, I'll definitely get that. That's going to be, that will be a lot of fun, actually.
Wow, that's, it really that's... will be, and I've done a lot of computer stuff lately, so I'm really looking forward to, excited about doing something a little different.
Anna the Magnificent. Well, can you tell us where we might be able to pick up this new book of yours?
Well, the easiest thing to do is to go to www.braille.com. That's the National Braille Press site. And there's a search form on that first page, and you can just type in iPod or iPod Experience, either one, and it'll be one of the search results on the next screen.
Okay. And we'll put links out there for everyone to get directly to where they can actually buy your book.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Well, listen, I really want to thank you for your time, and I can tell you that I've read the book. I actually spent the morning before work reading the entire book. It's a quick read. It's obviously not a quick do, but it's something where you actually could sit down and read the book in, say an hour and a half or so, but then you'd obviously want to use the back of the book as a reference. But it was a charming book to actually read and follow Anna's experience of figuring out all about the iPod Shuffle. And the book is only $6, so you can't beat that. So head on over to the website and pick that up. Well, before we actually get into Daryl's presentation today on Main Menu, we thought we'd bring Daryl on to talk a little bit about a late-breaking news story concerning Google and CAPTCHA.
Excellent. Thank you very much. About 7 months ago, I started the Blind Access Journal, and shortly after that, noticed that Google was using visual verification for a number of functions. Visual verification is needed to create Google accounts, reset passwords, create Gmail accounts, and starting in April of this year, it became required in order to create a blog on Google's blogger.com service. Even before the blogger requirement, back in February, I began writing to Google asking for an accessible alternative to visual verification. I would get these canned responses telling me that my concerns are noted. And I was offered assistance in creating a Google account. However, that assistance came 5 or so days after I placed the request for help through Google's support email address. So anyhow, in April, shortly after the blogger.com implementation of inaccessible visual verification, I wrote them again, and shortly after that published articles on Blind Access Journal urging others to write. Fast forward to July 5th, I received a call on the comment line for the Blind Access Journal from a journalist at internetnews.com. And she was very interested in interviewing me for a story on the accessibility of search engines. Of course, always willing to take any opportunity to spread the word about the need for accessibility, I jumped at the chance. And on Friday, July 8th, the story came out. And Susan did a very good job of writing a story talking about the need for accessible alternatives to CAPTCHA, or visual verification. The story is excellent. The journalist understands the points. She called Google, and Google's Director of Consumer Products indicates that within 1 to 2 months, Google will be implementing accessible alternatives to their visual verification system. I'd just like to add that there's another critical point to the story, and that is the issue of providing feedback to companies when an accessibility issue is encountered. Google's Marissa Mayer indicated that the company received minimal feedback on the inaccessible visual verification issue, so it was not prioritized. That tells us what we need to do as a blind community. It is absolutely critical that whenever we encounter a serious accessibility issue that impacts our participation, we must immediately and diplomatically write the company asking them to fix the issue. Welcome to a tutorial on the PacMate and T-Mobile Internet on the Move. I'll be covering how to connect the Freedom Scientific PacMate accessible PDA to your Nokia cell phone for the purpose of getting online from virtually anywhere that cell phone services cover. This is exciting. This capability allows one to connect in locations where there's no permanent internet connection, no broadband connection of any kind, no LAN connection through Ethernet, and so on. And also no Wi-Fi hotspots, no wireless hotspots are available. In the past, if you couldn't get online through broadband or through a hotspot or using a dial-up modem, you were stuck. You had to wait and hope that you had some work to do on your PacMate itself, that you had copied plenty of books to your compact flash file or documents to edit or so on and so forth. You couldn't get any new information or publish any new information until you were again connected with an internet service. Now, as long as you are in an area covered by your cellular provider's data service, you are all set. You can get connected to the internet. It is not easy to set this up, and that is the reason for this tutorial. It took me, a technician, over 2 months to get this to work right, and I went through a lot of calls to technical support for T-Mobile, all to no avail. I actually got it up and running thanks to a combination of some help from a blind colleague and internet research using Google.com. So, with no further ado, let's get started. By the way, if you have any questions for me or if I can help you a little further with the process of getting connected, please feel free to write me at editor@blindaccessjournal.com. That's editor, E-D-I-T-O-R, at blindaccessjournal.com. Or feel free to call the comment line, 206-350-6925. 206-350-6925. If you are asking for help on this tutorial, please do make it clear on the comment line whether or not you wish the message to be made public. Otherwise, I will use my own discretion. So please be clear on that. And here we go. This tutorial is specifically centered around the PacMate, the Nokia 3650 running the Tox screen reading software. It's manufactured by ScanSoft, and the T-Mobile internet service. T-Mobile is really a nice service if you want to do this a lot, as they offer a $20 a month unlimited plan. So it's like having an unlimited dial-up account. So that is better than some other offerings, cellular data offerings out there. The connection speed is a little bit faster than a 28.8 dial-up modem, so it's slow. But it's better than nothing, and you can do a number of things. You can do some web browsing. You can do instant messaging quite easily. In fact, that's a lot of what I do with it. And you can even stream. You can, in fact, stream ACB radio content. Before we get started, let's go over the equipment that you will need in order to make this work. Again, you can substitute other equipment. This is just the equipment that I happen to have at my disposal. So we start with a Nokia 3650 cell phone running Tox. Any version will do. You don't need the latest 2.0. In fact, I'm still running 1.2 of Tox. I haven't seen fit to upgrade yet. it meets my needs. So I have 1.2 version of Tox on a Nokia 3650 cell phone with Bluetooth enabled. Bluetooth is enabled on this phone. Then there's the PacMate. I happen to have the PacMate QX420. Although any of the QX or BX models should meet your needs just fine. It's not necessary to have a BX or a QX420. So firmware 2.5 or the new 3.0 should work out just fine for you on the PacMate. And maybe the PacMate BNS and the TNS models, the older models, would also work. Unfortunately, I don't have any personal experience, so if you have one of those models, just give it a try. Now, you will need Bluetooth capability. It's not built into the PacMate. So I have a Bluetooth compact flash card. I have the Socket Communications Bluetooth connection kit, which I do strongly recommend. It is the easiest card to install onto your PacMate, in as far as installing not only the hardware but the drivers, the software that accompanies the card, and it works the best. Reading the PacMate list on PacMateGear.com, I find that there are other cards from manufacturers such as Ambicom, and unfortunately the experiences are not as seamless as the Socket Communications Bluetooth connection kit. So I'm recommending that particular Bluetooth solution for what it's worth. So last but not least, you need to have a data plan added to your cell phone account. And again, this tutorial centers around T-Mobile. So if you don't have T-Mobile, you have another GPRS type provider on a GSM cellular network. No need to be too concerned with those terms. They're just required in order to get connected through this method. The instructions will be specific for T-Mobile. So change some of the parameters according to information from your own cell phone provider, and you should be all set for connecting. So this is how we're going to proceed. We're going to start on the cell phone, preparing the cell phone to be bonded via Bluetooth with the PacMate. Then we're going to set up the PacMate side of that bonding. This process is also referred to as pairing by other manufacturers and industry groups that use Bluetooth technology. So bonding and pairing are synonymous. So we're going to set up the PacMate side of the Bluetooth connection. Then we'll go back to the cell phone and make sure that we're all set up so that the cell phone is able to connect to the T-Mobile data service. That was a difficult step for me, getting the correct parameters located, getting the information on them located, and then getting them into the cell phone was a little tedious, so I will demonstrate that. Then we will go back to the PacMate and set up the dial-up connection to successfully connect to the cell phone and access the data service. Once that has been established and tested, we'll do some demonstrations of web browsing and instant messaging and so on using the newly established cellular data connection. Okay, so let's go into the Nokia cell phone. I'm going to press the menu key right now.
Menu. Menu window. Telephone. 1 of 23.
And I hope this I hope this cell phone is loud enough. It's set to the highest available volume setting on talks. I'm going to go down to the connection menu.
Contacts.
I should say the connectivity menu.
Profiles, messaging, log, calendars, cameras, images, a video recorder, help, 10 of 20.
And I'm pressing the down arrow portion of the five-way selection scroll button, scroll / selection button on the Nokia phone itself. So down
services,
arrow.
Services, 11, applications. Favorites, 30, additional, games, 50, tools, 6, connectivity, 17 of 20.
There's connectivity. Now I'm going to select it. I'm going to push what's known as the select button, which is the middle of this five-way button. It's a circular button. It's pretty cool, especially with a screen reader on board. If you didn't have talks, it would be a nightmare from an accessibility point of view. But since we do, press select.
Select. Connectivity window. Bluetooth. 1 of 3. P1. Options. P2. Mac.
Okay. So I'm going to press select on Bluetooth.
Select. Bluetooth window. Bluetooth on. 1 of 3. P1. Options. P2.
Okay, so Bluetooth is on. That's good. Going down.
My phone's visibility shown to all. 2 of 3.
Okay, good. My phone's visibility is already shown to all, and I do believe that is the Nokia default. But it's always a good idea to go in here and make sure you're set up properly anyhow. So, I need this, to be set to, quote, shown to all, quote, which makes the device discoverable. So the PackMate will be able to go out there on the Bluetooth connection and find the phone. Once we are all set up and bonded, I will be going back into this menu and changing its status to hidden, which makes the device undiscoverable. We want the PackMate and the phone to be able to talk to one another, but we don't want someone else to easily be able to discover the cell phone and potentially use it for malicious purposes or remove some of the information from the phone or do some of the other things that we have from time to time heard about happening on people's cell phones due to having a wide-open, insecure Bluetooth connection.
My Bluetooth name, Nokia 3650, 3 of 3.
Now, we're going to just leave the name set to Nokia 3650. It is recommended that the name of the phone be changed, but since the phone will ultimately be non-discoverable, I'm not really all that worried about it at this point. Besides, it's painful to use a numeric keypad to type a lot of text. Some people are quite good at it. I just don't happen to be one of those, I guess. Okay, so now that I've verified that the cell phone is discoverable, I'm going to press the menu button to move out of the menus.
Menu. Menu window. Telephone. 1 of 23. P1. Options. P2.
Well, that didn't quite happen the way I expected. So press menu again.
Menu. TMO window. 634 new messages.
Yes. I have too many text messages. I got spammed at some point, and I just have not had a chance to remove them. Pushing T2 to get out of that message.
Exit. TMO window. P1.
Okay, when I was in the Bluetooth menu, pushing the menu key by itself should have moved me back to the main window on the phone, to the main screen, but apparently that didn't happen. But we're all set now.
We will be bringing you the next part of Daryl's review next week on Main Menu. Before we let you go, we thought we'd give you a couple of newsworthy items that you'd want to be aware of. As many of you are already aware, this is Harry Potter Week. On July 16th, Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince will be available. If you are a Bookshare member, then Bookshare has announced that they will have it available on their website the day of the book's release, July 16th. Head on over to www.bookshare.org and read all about what they're planning on doing. I think it's a valiant effort and they should be commended. In addition, National Braille Press is going to be releasing Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince either in 9 Braille volumes or in portabook format on July 19th. So head on over to National Braille Press's website at nbp.org and get your copy ordered now if you want it at a cheaper rate. Do remember that Main Menu is your technology program. If you have anything that you would like to have appear on Main Menu, or if you have any questions about any of the topics that we've covered here on Main Menu, then please do get a hold of us at mainmenu@acbradio.org. That's mainmenu@acbradio.org, and we'll be happy to get back to you. We'll have another episode of Main Menu next week. Don't forget that Main Menu can be heard at 1 Universal on Wednesdays, and that's 9 o'clock Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. Take care, everyone, and we'll see you next week on ACB Radio's technology program, Main Menu.